is Notes from a Native Daughter. I am Soldanela. I am here with a young emerging author. And as Mia Garcia, I know this young mind since she was really little. And we're all proud of her. She's a published author, acclaimed. Some beautiful reviews of her first debut novel. And she was also the person that that the editing and made sure that I followed AP style for my master's thesis. And she rocked it because I passed. So I thank you. And I thank you for coming and giving me this time.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I hope I...
So let's talk about the novel first.
Okay.
And it's a love story. It's a coming of age.
Yeah.
And New Orleans, Puerto Rico, hurricanes. Coño, estabas un poquito...
I know.
On the witch broom.
Sí, la.
Right?
Premonition.
You know, you're writing for young audiences.
Yeah. It's actually very... My first and second book are very interesting projects. Because I actually developed them with an editor as opposed to on my own, alone in a small room worrying about my ideas. It happened sort of not accidentally, but how you sometimes think if you're that type of person who continues to put themselves out there and doesn't always work, but then that one time it actually does work. When my editor had gone to my master's school to give a presentation on editing and books and stuff like that. And she wanted to see samples of works. She encouraged us all to submit samples of our works for possible future projects that she might think would be interesting. And I did that. And she actually got back to me. And we started talking about some project ideas that she had, and specifically one that she wanted to set in New Orleans. And I had literally just come back from a trip to New Orleans. And then the story just started flourishing from there as a collaboration, which was very interesting. It was the first time I had done something like that. And it was a little scary, but very interesting as well. Because usually as an author, you're on your computer, it's your ideas. Maybe you'll sound some things off from a critique partner or something, but you're usually mostly on your own until you're ready to show a completed story to someone that you trust. While in this process, we were going back and forth on plot details and like character development and like who people were. And like my editor's original idea, the main character wasn't Puerto Rican. And I was like, well, can I include a lot of stories like from my life and like where I'm from? So it grew from there and it became finally the story that was published. I'm doing something similar for my second novel that's being published in fall 2018. And then I'm finally...
The resolutions,
yes. Like New Year's resolutions. So that's also the collaboration process, which is with a completely different editor. So I had to like relearn everything all over again because every editor has their own style and you sort of have to adjust.
Which is very good for you.
It was a very good learning experience on both ends to learn how like to take critique from new people. To understand that every editor has their own sort of language when they say things, which can sometimes be a little bit difficult and frustrating, but eventually you sort of go into a groove.
So let me ask you this. Let's go back.
Yeah.
So how did you choose the genre that you're in? But let's go back. When do you decide that you have a writing bug?
I think that was there for a very long time. I wrote a lot when I was in high school, but I never thought that writing would be a career. It was just something that I did. I remember specifically figuring out that I always kept a diary, but I never understood why I kept a diary. Because I would see people in the movies like, escribiendo el diario, like, today mi día was like this. And I was like, this is really boring. And I would keep that diary, but I was like, I don't know why I'm writing this. And then at some point, I remember that the diary evolved from things that happened in my day to stories that I wanted to tell. And that's sort of where it clicked a little bit, where I was seeing what I wanted to do different in a different lens instead of like, this is what happened, blah, blah, blah. But like, you know, I had this very interesting dream, and here's like 5 pages of what happened in that dream. Or like, here's some characters that keep talking in my head. And like, that was sort of, I can pin down that was a change into like, this is something that I like to do a lot.
Did it make you feel less lonely or something?
Yes, I think it did. I think it made me more comfortable being alone as well. One of my mi maestro de teatro, I remember one time, I don't know why, he decided to give a characteristic of every person in the class. I don't know why you would do that. You're like, this person, like, blah, 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 you have, like, a great attitude. Da, da, da. And then when he got to me and he looked at me, he's like, I feel like there's little tiny worlds inside of your head that are constantly forming. And I'm like, I would love to see them. And I was like, it's very true.
That's awesome. Like,
dang it, he knows.
And have you ever gone back to read those notebooks? Do you keep them?
Oh, see, yeah, I still have them.
So how did that evolve? So then you realize you have like all these little worlds in your mind.
Yeah.
And so you ran with it. But how did you hold on to it? Like, did you go for a bachelor degree?
No. I got my bachelor's in English literature and psychology.
You still have to write, though.
Yeah, I still have to write, though. I mean, I hate writing essays. Very much dislike them. But it was a slow process. And I think, like, my love of reading helped along the way. Keeping those diaries, they're, I guess, writing journals, because sure, they weren't really diaries. Definitely. And also writing fan fiction also helped.
Fan fiction.
Fan fiction. You never heard of fan fiction?
No.
Okay. So imagínate que you're like in love with Lord of the Rings. It's like your favorite thing in the world, or whatever, peli, libro, etc. And you love it so much that you create your own stories within that world. So that's essentially fan fiction.
Oh my God.
So I did that.
I think I'm a groupie of that.
Yeah.
I just didn't know. I have whole worlds in Stranger Things,
yes,
for example, these
days. Exactly. You create your own narrative within the story.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Fan so fiction. You started writing that.
Yes. Like little
for
short
what?
Stories. Lord of the Rings. Pirates of the Caribbean. I don't know if you remember.
I do. I like the first two.
And James Bond, for some reason.
Mm.
James Bond, yeah. I definitely still have them on my computer, but they're not on the internet anymore. Don't try and look for them.
Do you become intentional at some point and you say, I'm going to be a writer and I'm going to be working publishing, or how does that happen?
So I absolutely want to become a writer came after I graduated. I moved to New York. I was at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. I moved to New York. I actually worked in theater for a little bit, like administration and finding any sort of job, and then sort of wasn't finding my groove in New York. So I went back to Puerto Rico and did like odd jobs there, and then decided, like, you know, if I want to do this for real, I want to like dedicate time to it. So I applied for an MFA and I got into the new school. And then that's when I came over and then sort of started making like actual, like, determined moves towards the career or the path I wanted. Knowing that, you know, it's very hard to be a writer full-time, so that it would be something that I would do. I would be full-time job and full-time writer, and something that I would have to balance, which is what I did. I worked in Penguin for 6 years. I got one of the people who was in my MFA worked at Penguin, and she got me a job interview, and that's how I got my foot in the door. And I worked there for 6 years and learned a lot about the other side of writing, the publishing part, and the everything that goes in the back end of creating a book, which was also very helpful.
Sure.
Yeah, because if you want to succeed, you also have to know about the business side of art, which is very different from the creation part of art.
Of any art.
Of any art, yeah. Of any art.
It's not exclusive of books, I would think.
Yeah, exactly.
Some of the struggles. And so what are some of the challenges, I guess, of Latino authors?
I think the challenge of any author of color is there was a recent, every year this great company called Lee & Lowe Books that work a lot with books for people by people of color, and of stories of people of color, they put out this census that essentially they show, like, this is the percentage of books written, like, with main white characters, books with characters that are animals or anthropomorphic beings, and then it's like Black, Latino, Native, Asian, blah blah blah, and you can literally see if you combined all the people of, like, non-white people, it wouldn't still, like, get anywhere near the even anthropomorphic characters. Like, there's so few characters of color and creators of color that are published.
Wow.
That it's very hard overall, but it's because of the social media age and the age of people being able to actually have a voice online, a lot of that is changing. It's still very slow, but I feel, like, very positive towards the people who are fighting for this and making sure that there is more and more representation out there by, like, creators of color and also behind the scenes in publishing, getting people of, like Latino editors and Latino, like, marketing people and stuff like that.
Which is true for all these other industries.
Exactly. Yes. Right? Yeah. Getting people behind the scenes and in front of the scenes.
And what is it? What is it? What is it behind the scene of creation? So you're working behind the scenes, but you're also a creator.
Mm-hmm.
What part of that was at Clash, and what part of that was in Synergy? And I say this because I've also been a performer and a mm-hmm. behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And I think there are moments where, you know, things are in sync and other things just come to, like, you know, those two magnets that mm-hmm. kind of want to,
because they don't go together.
But
yeah,
they,
yeah.
they can't quite connect.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest one is always time. You have a full-time job, but you also want to dedicate your time to the part that is your soul, which is your art. Yeah. And as in working with any art in the business behind the scenes, the heartbreaking truths of certain realities, that you would have these books that you absolutely love that were just that were gorgeous and absolutely deserved a lot of praise. And they didn't get any marketing, or no one talked about them because they wouldn't sell as well as something that was more commercial, or like sales wouldn't get as behind it or something else, and it would just, like, disappear, and not a lot of people would talk about it. And that was sort of heartbreaking because I see myself in those little books, because I'm just like, I'm probably never going to write, like, the huge blockbuster book. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I learned those realities and sort of use them to move forward myself, like, push myself forward and not wait for anybody else to do it. Because it is, many thousands of books are published a year. A very small amount of those books appear in magazines or are reviewed even. And the rest are sort of quietly forgotten. And, like, that was, like, always very heartbreaking. I was like, why is no one talking about this? This is a beautiful thing.
Yeah, because you understand the writer.
Yeah.
What they've been
through. Yeah, they put their, like, heart and soul behind it. And also, they also understand, as someone who worked very long hours to market books, that there's also just, like, not enough hours in a day to work on every single book. I used to work until, like, 9 or 10 o'clock at night on things, and there was, like, still not enough time to, like, get through everything. So it was learning, yeah, how to become more self-sufficient, I guess, when I actually did publish my first book and, like, do things on my own and not, like, not wait.
Like what?
I learned Photoshop by myself. Mm-hmm. That's one thing I could recommend, is learn design programs. So you can make your own, your things, like your bookmarks, your postcards, like, design your own website. Like, don't wait for anybody else to do that for you. Like,
DIY.
Yeah, DIY it. Learn to, like, learning to talk to booksellers. Try and plan events on your own. Like, researching festivals and, like, seeing if you can get in, like, pitch yourself in a panel for a festival. Because there's no one more overworked than publicists in the book world, like, have no time. And they are, like, yeah, they need all the help that they can get. So, like, learn to hustle. Learning to hustle
and it's
for
an
yourself.
Aggressive, yeah. Public relations landscape right now.
Yeah.
As a publicist, I know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very scary.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to someone in cinema, Carlos Gutierrez, and he was saying, you know, how much PR has changed in the last, let's say, 10 years.
Yeah.
And even the last year alone.
Mm-hmm.
But I can relate to publicists.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's the same.
I had nothing but respect for every single publicist I worked with when I was at Penguin. And I'm publishing my own book. They have so much. They like live on their phones and live mm-hmm. Like moving emails around and mm-hmm. getting stuff done. Yeah, but there's usually like maybe a dozen of them for more than several hundreds of books. So they can't get to everyone, which is the sad reality that sometimes you're. Your book is not that important.
Yeah. I know, it sucks.
Yeah.
So how do you practice writing?
Oh, gosh. Okay. So I'm a procrastinator, like a bad procrastinator. So I have to be very mean to myself. This last year, the way I've been writing is dividing things into beats and scenes, getting to an emotional arc in a chapter. And I'll try to hit that arc, and that'll be my writing goal for the day. So sometimes that means a chapter can be 3 pages, or it can be 20 pages long. But that's usually when I'm under deadline. That's usually how I divide things. And whenever I finish some sort of big revision, I take a break so that I can sort of refresh my head with the story, and even like forget the story a little bit. So when I go back and edit, things are fresher and I can see the mistakes easier. But definitely, like I'm sure like other writers will tell you that the story happens in the edits. You know, your first version of the story is not how it's going to end up. This last novel that's coming out in fall 2018, the Resolutions, I rewrote from like the entire book at least 4 or 5 times, in addition to all the small chapter edits. Like I had to go back from the beginning and just rip things apart 4 or 5 times because it was just not working. And that was both heartbreaking and like exhausting, but like towards the end, worth it, obviously. I finally got to where hopefully I needed to be.
The way I think about it, the procrastination sometimes, I know what I want to write, but I need to think. I need to think about it, right? Because you mm-hmm. can't just write. You got to think about what you're going to write.
Yeah.
And then after I think what I want to write, then I need to, like, write notes about it a little bit.
Mm.
And some things I need to, like, research mm-hmm. and be like, am I saying this right? Is this really what I want to say?
Yeah.
So that process becomes.
Mm-hmm. And then I usually go into a research hole, and then I've researched too far for what I needed, but then I can't get out of it. And I was like, stop, you don't need this information. You just go back. You're avoiding the story sometimes. I'm a bad procrastinator.
No, it's a way to your process.
Yes. In algún punto, I start cleaning the house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Instead of writing, they're like, ay, lo que limpian ese closet.
So, who are some of your, you know, inspirations?
Oh, this question is so difficult.
I know.
I have a lot of different, because I love movies and TV, and I grew up. I sort of feel like I always say I love narrative. In all its forms, because I grew up on narrative and you know, Siendo de Puerto Rico, the storytelling, you know, runs through our veins, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Why is that?
You know,
idiosyncratic?
Idiosyncratic, tú sabes, yo sé que los puertorriqueños usan 50 palabras para decir algo que se puede decir con 10. You know, my grandfather always told me stories. Growing up, he was always that. What I loved about my grandfather, he would never deny darkness.
Mm.
You know? That when I would say, like, you know, there's a monster in that room. And he's like, yeah, you probably should not go in there. I was like, what? He's like, yeah, there's something in there. You shouldn't go in there. Like, now.
Like, the okay. Imagination.
Yeah. I was like, what? Is there something in there? He would always tell me these, like, little stories, like little ghost stories and stuff like that. And it was always part of our relationship. But I just feel like in general, narrative is part of a lot of Latin American countries and in the Caribbean, and just like how we tell our folk tales and our traditions and stuff like that, you know. Yeah. I'm gonna go all over the place. So like Guillermo del Toro, mm-hmm. I really find inspiring, and I think that despite the fact that my first two books are like contemporary, don't have a lot of magical realism and stuff like that, what I usually write is something along the lines of magical realism. And the book I'm currently writing now is very much magical realism set in the 1920s. It's still going. I don't know where it's going to go. But Guillermo del Toro, I think, like Pan's Labyrinth and just even his like commercial work, like I love Hellboy and I'm a fan of Pacific Rim. Isabel Allende and Rosario Ferre, obviously growing up, Gabriel Garcia, I guess. I don't know if she's American. Diana Wynne Jones, okay, she wrote Howl's Moving Castle. Que también Hayao Miyazaki made a movie out of it.
I don't know. I have not heard this.
It's one of my Howl's Moving Castle is one of my favorite. Actually, one of my favorite books, by the way it treats magic, and just like it's like magic is just like dust on tables. It's just something that's around. So that was something I always loved about that book. She's I like her as an inspiration. Hayao Miyazaki. He's in animation. I don't know if you've ever seen any of his movies, but I think you might actually like them. They're beautiful. Animated films also have their own magical element, usually having to do with children and so on, and they're just beautiful films. I'm a huge fan of horror movies and horror novels, and I think it goes back to the whole like monster thing and like what it shows. Horror movies, if you like really take a look at them, show where we're going in terms of like what our fears are in society and what we find frightening. At least really good horror books and like horror movies will show you that. So I obviously I was way too young to be watching the horror movies that I was watching, and had a lot of sleep issues growing up, but they were definitely a cornerstone of my childhood. And also like movies like Dark Crystal and Labyrinth and Jim Henson. That sort of combination again of like fantasy and just overall weirdness, which I think it goes into Guillermo del Toro as well. That sort of fits into that little weird fantasy genre.
How do you come to decide that you write for young audiences?
I worked in young readers when I was a penguin, so I was surrounded for 6 years with young reader books, which ranged from picture books all the way to young adult, which is much older. And just like had this appreciation of not only the hard work that goes on behind the scenes, but also the breadth of talent that there is in young adult literature and children's literature in general. And I think, good art is good art, no matter what age you're writing for. And sometimes you want to write about what it felt like to be scared at 16, and sometimes you want to write about what it feels like to be scared at 30 something now, and you realize that sometimes those feelings are often the same and they echo through many years.
Do you feel you relate to young audiences?
I think anyone can relate to young audiences. I think people often forget what it felt like to be that age, and forget that those feelings are still inside you somewhere. And sometimes we have a tendency to disregard people of a certain age for whatever reason. But I still feel a lot of the things that I felt when I was 16, and can still connect to people still trying to figure out who they are and trying to find their way. As an adult, I'm still, aren't we all constantly trying to figure out who we are and growing and trying to navigate, specifically now in 2018, where we've gone through these ridiculous years of trying to navigate who we are and where our future is going. and the world around us. And she's still going.
She's still going.
She's a firecracker, that Judy.
So she's a mature woman, always in contact with, I guess, she's concerned about youth, right? Is there an altruistic side of this writing thing?
I think it depends on the story. I think a lot of the times, when we're talking about my own self, sometimes the story just comes as it is, and you have to figure out how to navigate it.
But is there a moral to it? Do you want to offer like a lesson?
I think lesson books are different. I think you sometimes can identify books that are just trying to get out like a specific morality. That's complicated. Because I don't think any author sets out to impart like some like specific like drugs are bad. This is what this book is going to be about. Rather that the journey of their specific character, and if it happens to also help someone along the way, that's absolutely fantastic. But I feel like not every book has to have a lesson. Just like I don't set out to have like, I don't watch documentaries every day. Sometimes I watch silly films. Sometimes I watch comedies. Sometimes I watch drama. And then all that art is valid in its own way. And I think books are the same. You don't have to set out to be like the awesome literary, you know, fix all the problems of humanity in one book sort of way.
I've recently had
a lot of conversation about not understanding that you cannot be every Latino everywhere. Like my Puerto Rican character in my book is not every Puerto Rican that's ever existed. You know, I can't give you the experience of every Puerto Rican girl of like 16, 17 years. Like, this is not every single person's experience, and it's never going to be that.
I wonder, you know, children's books, for example, they, for the most part, I feel like what I've read aims at some pedagogical goal, right? Whether it's to get the children to learn letters, numbers, concepts.
You definitely have to remember who your audience is in terms of, for example, if you have a character that is like unrepentantly like a horrible racist person, like what are you at the end of the novel? Like, what are you saying about that? Like, is it acknowledged? Are you talking about it like it doesn't exist? Are we glossing over it? I think in any story written, you have to think about, at the end of the day, what are you putting out into the world?
Mm-hmm.
I usually write from home unless it's too busy, noisy. Yeah. And I write longhand.
You do?
Yeah.
Old school.
Yes. I have my notebooks. I write longhand.
Wow. And then you transcribe?
And then I transcribe. Yeah. I go usually chapter by chapter. And usually when I transcribe, I re-edit. As I write it down, and then anything new is, I usually can't get a word out unless I write it on paper. It like helps a lot to write it on paper. Yeah.
So are you like one of the few Puerto Rican young women authors out there?
There are a few of us. They're
in the genre that you're in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. There's more of us every year, and they're all fantastic.
Do you know each other?
Mostly through Twitter,
because
it's hard to.
Sure.
Everyone's in a different location. There's a lot of not only just Puerto Rican, like Latinas in general, out there putting their work and working hard. It's fantastic to see it grow every year, and like the stories that you see that are coming out there. I think there's like a horror novel coming out. I can't remember who wrote it. That's a horror novel coming out next year set in Puerto Rico. And I was like, fabulous. It's fantastic.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's exciting to see more and more people putting their voice out there and have, as Oprah said, getting their truth heard.
Oh, yeah. I'm all for that. Some do's and don'ts.
Oh, gosh, do's and don'ts. Okay, so the do is learn other skills like Photoshop and how to be your own, make your own promo, as they say. Have a group of trusted, a trusted critique group, people that you trust to read your work and tell you if anything is not working and so on. You gotta get really comfortable with being critiqued and like making mistakes and working on those mistakes. Be your own self-promoter because no one's gonna do it for you. Also, in part of getting a good critique group is support other work, essentially.
To support each other.
Yeah, support each other. Talk about if it's hard for me as a Latina, it's gonna be hard for other Latinas. So I always try and promote their books and like talk about them and read them and like request them from libraries because that also helps. And like just try as much as I can to talk about other works so that people see that, you know, that's those are viable voices and then we like deserve to be heard and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, self-promote, learn other skills, put yourself out there, talk to booksellers and librarians and make friends with your local bookseller and librarian. They're going to be they're also going to get behind your book as well. And read a lot. And read outside of the things that you like to read.
That's a stretch for me these days. I'm obsessed with the news, and so I'm into a lot of nonfiction and essay. I do like novels. Because mm-hmm. like you, I'm an avid reader, and I do. Yeah. I think I go through phases.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Where right now I'm into Fenton Johnson right now. That's like this like amazing writer professor out in like New Mexico and. He writes for Harper. Well, he writes for a lot of different, mm-hmm. but he has essays there. And I've gone to his website. I've gotten two of his books. I've picked up books that he's recommended. Mm-hmm. But he's like a like an existential thinker.
Okay.
And, I feel like I'm kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm beginning to explore, like, how do I learn my own language or how do I feel comfortable with the way I mm-hmm. do that whole quest in me, looking some, not that I'm him in any way, shape or form, but like that
You're
inspiration,
you.
I'm me, You're but you. That I'm like, oh, okay. I think about things that he's thinking about
mm-hmm.
and I'm like, oh my God, but this is not light material. It's like, woo. But I love it. I love it, and I love writers. And it's such a high industry. And I don't mean industry as mm-hmm. the industry. I mean the personal industry, right? The
mm-hmm.
the commitment, the deciding, and the chutzpah. And
yeah.
Do you feel like you're in it for the long run?
I think so. I think if you want to be a writer, you need to think of it as a very long journey, not as like a one book thing. It's like think of it as like you in the future. You have many books under your belt. Some of them were good. Some of them were not great. Like you should be in it for the long haul.
Well, I'm really proud of you.
Thank you.
I am. It's wonderful to see someone become their own and see their creations and yeah. Any closing words?
Oh my gosh. Right. Don't feel bad if you can't write every day. I think like you find your own rhythm, I think one time I read this quote by Stephen King and he said that he wrote 4 to 6 hours a day. And I was like, yeah, man, that is like not happening. I'm going to write what I can. And that's good yeah. and good for me.
Yeah.
So don't compare yourself. Don't compare yourselves to other people. That's a big one. You're never going to write like Stephen King or whomever you love.
Yeah, he's a beast.
Loved.
He's like yeah. in this whole different realm.
You're going to write like you yeah. and you're going to find what works for you. And that's going to be much better. I promise. And I think going back to the whole writing for young children and children's books, and thinking about when you're writing a story, what you're putting out into the world. And I think I'm still thinking about that whole, like, do we have a responsibility thing? And I think it's such an interesting question and a complicated one, because of just the intricacies of that. But I think it all comes down to what you're putting out in the world, and what you're representing in your book, or like choosing to, what stories are you choosing to tell, essentially. Thumbs up.
I love it. Thank you.